We wrapped up another busy week on Connecticut Today on Friday, September 4th. We talked about a controversial vote on whether or not Governor Ned Lamont should continue with his emergency powers. We welcomed outgoing Senate GOP leader Len Fasano to the program and also heard from Carol Platt Liebau. Carol is the head of the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Well, the vote kind of went as people thought it would, but at least they had a vote. We're talking about a vote among some members of the General Assembly that almost didn't happen, but Democrats were pressured to do it. All this has to do with the executive powers, the emergency powers of Governor Ned Lamont. And this is a little bit in the weeds, a little inside baseball for people who really don't follow it this closely. So Len Fasano joins us, outgoing state Senate Minority Leader, to talk about this and how the Republicans were able to actually pressure the Democrats into having this vote. Len, how are you? Hope all is well. And I know the vote went pretty much the way everybody thought it would, but am I correct to assume that the majority Democrats didn't really have an intention of having this vote or not?
They were not going to have this vote. In fairness to them, we had a discussion when the governor called us in the room and we talked about it, and they said, look, you can voice your objection by letter if you want, and we wouldn't have a vote. And in fairness to them, we did do that. Then there was a press conference, and I guess a lot of folks in the Republican House wrote letters, and that ended up having them go into a vote mode.
So, Len, explain, and I've talked about it roughly over the past few days when this thing bubbled up, you know, late last week, early this week. Explain by the state charter here, the state constitution, what is happening here and what we're getting to the end of this three-day period later on today, if you can just explain that.
Okay, so there's two powers, predominantly, that the governor asked for. The first power is the civil preparedness power. And that power is by statute. And we've seen that a lot with governors when you have hurricanes, tornadoes, snowstorms, things like that of natural consequence. When the governor invokes his powers under that statute, civil preparedness, it's very expansive, very broad, and there's no vote by anybody. The only way you could stop that power would be running to court. And most times we've seen that, you know, a week, he'll institute that for various reasons, or a day or two for snowstorms, what have you. Then also under civil preparedness, there's another power. If it is man-made, then the legislative leaders could vote to say, we don't want you to have that power. And that's done because man-made means something external by another human force, which may cause politics to get involved. So we don't want politics to drive the governor into an emergency issue, so we allow the six leaders to vote it out. In this case, the governor did the first, said this is not man-made, it's a pandemic, therefore I am instituting the powers, and then, oh, by the way, you can't vote on that. And that could only last 6 months. He did that in March, and essentially he's asking to renew that. And we can't vote on it. We have no jurisdiction. The other power he asked for is public health. Public health, there is a panel of 10 that can get together, which is what we did today, and we did back on March 9th. This panel of 10 gets together and says, should we give the governor the power? If we don't take a vote, he gets it. Obviously, if we vote for it, he gets it. Or we could vote to deny it. In March, we all got together because the pandemic was reaching a peak, and we gave them those powers. Well, they lapse as of, I think, like 2 o'clock today, something like that. Mm-hmm. Now he's renewed those powers. So the vote today essentially was to renew the powers under public health. Our argument was twofold. One, you already have your emergency civil preparedness power that you don't need to ask us for, which is broad power in depth and in breadth. You can do anything you want, and we can't do anything about it. The public health is a more narrow has to deal exactly with public health. So you really don't need that power if you have the broad power. Public health is a subset of it. Number two, to the extent that you want that power, the public health, you need to be more collaborative. You really were in March. You really were in April. You really were in part of May. And then all of a sudden, we didn't hear from you, essentially. We found out about your orders by virtue of either an email or we heard it on the news. And we don't think that was appropriate. And that's been our stand going into this meeting. I will say, in all fairness to the governor, he heard us loud and clear. And this morning, I think it was, or yesterday, I can't recall. It was yesterday. He sent an email saying, we're going to get together. We're going to talk about not only future orders, should I do some, well, let's review the older orders to see if we have to modify them or what have you. I will also say, after the vote, and about a couple hours ago, the governor has set up a meeting next week for legislative leaders, asking if they're available next week to start talking about what powers, what we should do, how we're going to move forward in certain things. So I'll give Governor Lamont credit for listening to us and reacting in a very positive fashion to move the discussion more bipartisan.
Well, and I think that's good. And I think, and I talked about this earlier in the week, majorities being what they are, and we all know what, at least at this time, the majorities are in this state. But, Len, I just said I thought it was a matter of just respecting the process and showing people that no matter what the majority is going to do or no matter what the governor is going to decide to do, that people and lawmakers in this state who are either not in the majority or people who don't side with the majority for whatever reason, politics being what it is, at least lend the process in all of this. And a lot of this should be respected. And I, as you say, it's nice that the governor did that. He seems to be wanting to move this forward. And I get the sense, Len, maybe I'm wrong, you tell me, but at least there was a light went off and said, okay, maybe we have to do this.
I think there was a light that went off, but I also want to bring out another point that kind of is slipping through the cracks here. And I said this at the very beginning of the meeting today, is that, look, we're in historic times, and never before has a governor had the power for as long as he's had the power that Governor Lamont had. And if we simply did not have a meeting to talk about some of the problems we've had in giving a governor that amount of power, not that it's his fault, that, communications staff issue and his issue, but if we didn't have this meeting today, that would not be in the historic annals of the state of Connecticut.
Yes.
So if 20 years from now, 30 years from now, someone would say, we have the same situation and they want to give the powers to the governor, someone may say, well, what happened in 2020? And they'll say, gee, they gave him the powers in March. They didn't meet after that. Everything must have been hunky-dory. So everything must have gone by very well. We don't have anything to fear giving them powers. I think there needs to be a recordation that this was new to everybody, that there were some problems, there were some hiccups. And the next legislature in the future that has to deal with this may learn from that and say, we should be careful, we should do this, whatever they decide to do. But I think there needed to be on the record a reflection of what happened, why we're here, why we're having this meeting, and how the powers have gone so far as the executive branch and the legislative branch working together. And that is very common for the legislature to look back at unique situations. For example, when we were 18-18 in the state Senate, we went back 87 years or something like that to find out how they did it that long ago, in terms of working out the Senate, the rules, and all that stuff. And we gleaned some very good things from that record. So it's very common that when situations occur in a Capitol, committees, budgets, impeachment, going back to Governor Rowland, you look at what happened in history to help you do a better job now. And that's why I felt it was very important that we have the meeting.
Len, hang on. I want to get a couple more questions in with you if you can. The weather's going to get cold pretty soon, and what's going to happen to all this outdoor dining? Len Fasano joins us. Len, hang on. Traffic and weather together, 316 on WICC. A couple of more minutes with North Haven State Senator Len Fasano. Len, you know, I'm driving around the other day in Wallingford, in the center of the universe, and I'm saying to myself, it's a nice night, everybody's out dining, nice warm night, all up and down Route 5, and I'm saying to myself, you know what, in about another month, it's going to be cold out here. And I'm wondering, as we get into October, November, if we've given any thought, or whether you've heard anything, as to what's suddenly going to happen. I mean, everybody is kind of settled into this, hey, we're okay for all these restaurants because everybody's eating outside. Is that going to happen in November or December? Is anybody talking about that? What are your thoughts on that?
So that is on the radar screen, from what I understand, because I raised it the other day. And I know, just to see if they were talking about it, and they are talking about it. So I think people, I think the governor's office is starting to focus on that issue, Paul. So that's good. Now, I don't know if they made any decisions. But here's the real key to this. The key is, what are the metrics we're looking at? What I mean by that is, we talked about the fact that if we're at 3% or less, then the infection would be under control, and we could open up part of the state. Well, we're at 0.8%, and we haven't opened up the state yet. So what is the number we're searching for? And that was kind of like what we're really trying to find out, and that's what's really missing from this equation. None of us know what the numbers the governor or DPH wants in order to reopen more things or loosen the restrictions. And I think that's a big issue. It's never going to be zero. We all get that.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere between zero and some other number. What is it?
Yeah. No, because, and again, Len, you've got to give some of these businesses, I would think, enough time to, okay, they're going to still give it a shot outside. Do they bring in these, you know, propane or butane heaters? And do they need a different type of tent? And not every business, Len, can afford this, too. You have high-volume places that can do it, but if it's a little mom-and-pop place, it seems to me, the dummy I am, it seems to me that we're kind of almost back at the beginning in March and April about this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And look, businesses cannot survive at 50% inside in the restaurants. The numbers just don't work when you add rent and everything else. You know, they have the outside that's supplementing some of this, but they can't survive. I mean, a lot of the restaurants are not even doing inside. If they could do outside, because if you do inside, there's a whole new set of staff you have to bring for inside. So they said, look, you know, I can put more people on the outside. I'm going to go to the outside. I'm not going to have inside dining. When the colder weather gets here and you go inside, you're still 50%. You're going to see a lot of restaurants saying, I just can't afford this. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the issue that I think is going to be faced. They are looking at it. As I said, we are getting together with the governor next week to have conversation. It's certainly what I am going to bring up. And I'll see what they say.
Len, thanks. Appreciate it. Enjoy the holiday weekend, and we'll talk down the line. Len, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Be good. Be good. Len Fasano there. Another opinion on this 6-4 vote that went down only after some cajoling by state Republicans that will go now on the permanent record of the state extending the emergency powers of Governor Ned Lamont. We had Len Fasano on earlier also to comment on this, an official statement and position on this from the conservative think tank in Connecticut, the Yankee Institute. Check them out online, yankeeinstitute.org. The head of the Yankee Institute, we welcome back Carol Platt live out of the show. Carol, Paul here. How are you?
Well, great to be with you, Paul.
Well, it looks like at least now this is on the record. I know that there were a lot of people who didn't want this 6-4 vote, Carol, that went down, but at least now this is in the permanent record of the state. So I guess that's kind of a small victory, but there are larger issues here as well.
Well, there are. And what's confusing to me is why the legislature can get together to pass a police bill, much of which isn't going to isn't going to go into effect for a year or two, but they can't get together to ratify the various issues that are confronting our state now. And, you know, everyone understands why there are certain things that the governor has to be able to do if there is indeed a public health emergency. But what isn't clear to me is why, in fact, the governor and the legislature can't decide at least on what the contours of the public health emergency actually is. In other words, when does the public health emergency end? When is there any sense among our legislators and our governor, our Connecticut government, what is the level of infection or death or any sense at all when this would no longer constitute an emergency, when we would in fact be able to go back to normal government? What would the infection rate have to be, or what would the death rate have to be?
In fact, Carol, I mentioned that to Len Fasano, who I had on earlier, and in the sense of, and we talked about that very issue, Carol, with, in fact, now, say the weather is going to change. You know, this nice romantic outdoor dining under the skies is nice when it's 70 degrees out, but, you know, what happens in a month when it's 55 or 45 degrees at night, everybody's wearing jackets, and, well, then what are the parameters, as you say, to, you know, maybe change and allow more restaurants to survive with more indoor dining?
And shouldn't the people's representatives in the legislature be having a voice in those deliberations? I mean, why is it? We all understand when the pandemic was sort of at its worst and decisions needed to be made quickly, why the governor needed to, you know, have emergency powers. But why does he need to have them now to make unilateral decisions? Shouldn't our legislators be weighing in on matters like those? Shouldn't they have a voice and a vote? And shouldn't the people be able to be heard through them?
Yeah, that's what frustrates me, Carol, and when I hear, well, and it goes back to exactly what you said. It was one of the legislative leaders in this issue we're looking at now. It may have been Marty Looney or may have been Joe Arisemowicz or somebody who said, well, you know, these things, when we get together, it can take time. These are extensive discussions. But then I think of exactly what you just said. But wait a minute. When you want to move, you can move pretty quickly. It doesn't mean you have to move on anything, but at least give the image that there's some input there. So, yeah, that's the conundrum, Carol. They seem to want to set what would it be, their own legislative speed limit here. And that's what I think tends to rub people the wrong way.
Well, and it's also a great way for legislators up for reelection to insulate themselves from accountability for what they might see as unpopular decisions.
Sure. No, absolutely. And you know, Carol, here's the other thing that kind of made my eyebrows peak a little bit. The extension of this, I think, goes till at least February, earlier mid-February now. That's into the next legislative session, which, of course, is the long session that kicks in after another round of elections for the state House and the state Senate. So how does that...
How does that square? If the people, by their votes, expressed a wish to take a different direction, they've foreclosed that option. They've foreclosed that option, haven't they, by extending this for essentially 6 months, half a year. And what I don't understand is, why is this being simply measured in months rather than being sort of triggered by infection rates or death rates or anything scientific? What is the scientific basis for continuing to simply arrogate these powers, the governor arrogating these powers to himself?
See, Carolyn, and I've always thought, if you're going to extend that, like you just said, okay, 6 months out, and you're going to admit in a roundabout way that, okay, well, you know, restaurants are still going to be bound here and there's still going to be no opening for bars. Well, I've always said, Carol, whether it's the federal government or the state government, you better damn be ready to compensate those people if you're going to do this by executive fiat and say, hey, well, you know, we know you've poured your blood, sweat and tears into that bar that your family's owned for 50 years, but you can't open up. There's a disconnect there that I don't get.
Well, there's a terrible disconnect that's only made worse by the fact that the governor did nothing to stop government employees from getting the second 5% pay increase in 2 years. The governors of New York and Virginia suspended their pay increase. They delayed it. The governor of California tried to do it, and so did the governor of Hawaii. And our governor simply said, oh, can't do anything about it. Got to just stand back and let government employees go ahead and get the second 5% pay increase in 2 years. And that's when, by fiat, he had closed down 36,000 private sector businesses and thrown 500,000 people in our state out of work. And so, again, you know, if we're all supposed to be doing this on the basis of science and listening to the science, shouldn't his decisions about when to hand over his emergency powers and hand them back be based on science and infection rates and the state's progress rather than just being seized for a matter of months and half a year?
Yeah, and Carol, the I think the problem here is I think people have been in some way, shape, or form, Carol, lulled into a little bit of a, and I talk about it on the air here all the time, a little bit of we're getting along, we're okay, and I think we are doing a good job per se, but, you know, people see the streets full, they see traffic, they see a lot of places reopen, but we tend to, I think, Carol, forget, not that it's intentional, but we forget some of these businesses and some of these people that are still out of work and still have hardships, and sometimes I ask myself, you know, I'm reading, Carol, last week of some, you know, immunologists and virologists saying, hey, it's going to be like 2 years before we really get back to quote unquote normal. Well, what happens to some of these business owners for two years? I don't get it.
And, you know, Paul, are we really getting back to normal? When you read these studies of young people where it says something like half of the young people between 18 and 24 have thought of suicide, when you hear about the mental health crisis that our country's facing, when you hear about the increase in drug abuse and alcohol abuse, when you hear about people not going to the hospitals to get the care they need, when you see signs urging parents to get their children their well visits, and you hear about hospital staff being laid off because people have been afraid to go in and get checked, I mean, I don't know. I think, and when I even walk down the streets of my town and I see the places that have been there since I moved here almost a decade ago and they've closed their doors, I don't know. Are we really doing okay?
Yeah, good point. Yankee Institute, check them out, Yankee Institute for Public Policy, yankeeinstitute.org, yankeeinstitute.org. The head of the Yankee Institute, Carol Platt-Leibau, has been the guest. Carol, always good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger. We'll talk.
Always good to be with you, Paul. Thanks.
Appreciate it.